Welcome to this new episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast by RFI English, produced and presented by me, Melissa Shema. Every month, I'll look at one of the biggest issues on the African continent, one country or one idea at a time. As you know, 2024 is a big election year, with no less than 16 African countries due to hold general, parliamentary or presidential elections. In this episode, I'll look back at the successful democratic elections in Senegal, an inspiration for other countries. We will also see how security issues in the Sahel countries have derailed the expected return to civilian rule, disrupting election schedules, especially in Burkina Faso, Mali and Niger, where military juntas have been in power for over 2 years. First, I spoke to Babacar Ndiaye, a former diplomat and senior fellow at the Dakar-based Timbuktu Institute. I asked him how he felt as a political analyst, but also as a Senegalese citizen, following the results of the presidential election in his country held on March 24th.
Great relief, and the relief was also felt among the people. I know the Senegalese believe in elections. Unlike many African countries, they've been involved in electoral democracy since 1848. They sent MPs to France Parliament. So clearly, despite politicians wrangling and fighting and tactics, they believed in their power to change their governments. And that was the reason why the fact that Macky Sall was trying to derail the process, manipulate the electoral process, preventing them from exercising that right, fueled violence. And Senegalese took the world by surprise. Everyone was expecting that they would go the other way, go to military coups and violence, etc. The Senegalese people kept on their historic trajectory. This is one clear lesson to learn. Senegal stayed on the course of democracy, on peaceful elections and peaceful competition to choose their leaders. And they expressed their voice without any doubt. It was a referendum against Macky Sall's regime. That is a warning also, I think, for this new government, despite the whole support they have, because they fought very hard and courageously through 3 years of suppression and all the shenanigans to have their platform. The question is now, they should stay on that course, respect the rule of law, allow the people to express their voice so that in 5-10 years, they could also freely express their choices, whether they're happy with the results or not. If not, they change and elect a new government. This is the long history, long course of democracy and stability in the long run for Senegal and other countries in the world that believe in democracy. It is now in question in West Africa and elsewhere in the world. There is no better system that can allow the people to express themselves freely and peacefully and guarantee peace and stability in the country.
Obviously, Senegal is setting a precedent as a very positive outcome with this election. But, you know, the neighboring countries, especially in the Sahel, are in a very dire situation. And we have reports of recent violence in Mali. While there, the junta is actually banning one of the opposition coalitions. 2024, we're supposed to see the return to the polls for Malians as well. You've written recently this report about elections and violence in the West Africa region. So what is your take on what can happen in Mali? Can this election be on track? Can the situation in Senegal weigh on the way the powers in West Africa are discussing with Mali? And you know, how do you read into the situation in Mali and Niger after this brilliant headlines that toured the world?
Very interesting what happened in Senegal, because it was only a referendum in Senegal, Macky Sall or change your country, but it was a referendum also about is democracy viable in West Africa or not, especially in the ECOWAS region. With the succession of coups and other influence from some foreign countries to discredit democracy, the streets started to buy into that narrative that democracy doesn't work. And everybody was expecting that Senegal will fall into that also, militarism, etc. And Senegalese told another different story. I will believe in democracy and it's viable. This is a counter-narrative and counter-example. I think that will make a difference. If Senegal had gone that way, that would be a catastrophe for ECOWAS. Mm-hmm. Because the reason they discredit ECOWAS is that ECOWAS values and vision is a vision of democracy, human rights are the basis for peace, stability, and potential prosperity. So those three countries, the reason why they broke away from ECOWAS ECOWAS. It's just because they didn't apply ECOWAS protocol that mandates democracy, human rights, and non-militarism with zero military coup. So the main reason for breaking away was they didn't want to stay out of ECOWAS influence and mandate, which recommend force them to hold elections and return. So my take is that the alliance, which we call the Khaki Alliance, the military alliance, was just to break away from ECOWAS, to free themselves from ECOWAS influence, that is to say, control the agenda where they want to return power to the civilians. And I don't think that's going to happen soon. Now they no longer have, because they're out of it. So yes, that will give them leeway and room for maneuver for controlling the agenda at their ease. So I don't see any possibility of those three countries returning to constitutional rule soon, whereas many say, you know, because the situation is not stable, there's not security, It's not time for holding election.
Thank you very much. Thanks again for your time.
Okay, welcome. Welcome. It's a pleasure, always.
Thanks. Merci.
Okay.
For Sadiq Abba, a journalist and political analyst from Niger, one of the main challenges to planning for election in the troubled Sahel countries is the insecurity. While the military juntas in power in Burkina, Mali and Niger promised to fight the Islamist insurgency, no improvement can be seen so far. In Niger, the president, Mohamed Bazoum, has been under house arrest since the military coup that happened in late July 2023.
There is no significant improvement in the security situation, despite the promise that was made by the military. For example, in the case of Niger, when they took power on the 26th of July in 2023, they promised that they would bring more security. Bazoum's regime failed, but 8 months later, we don't have the perception that there's an improvement in security with regard to the two main indicators we have. The number of attacks has not decreased. On the contrary, it has increased. The number of people killed has not decreased. On the contrary, it has increased in the specific case of Niger. This is something which isn't debatable. It is documented.
Ça, c'est quelque chose qui n'est pas discutable, qui est documenté. Donc, il n'y a pas d'amélioration sur le plan de la situation sécuritaire.
So, there's no improvement in terms of the security situation. And this confirms what we have always thought, that the solution is not just security and military. We also need to see how we can mobilize communities. Now, the only news is that there is a paradigm shift in the way the defense and security forces operate. Before, they waited to be attacked before defending themselves. But now, we see in the case of Niger, Mali, Burkina, they have an offensive posture. They go looking for jihadist groups. They go to engage.
Earlier in April, Mali's military junta ordered the suspension of all political activities, citing a need to maintain public order. The African Union expressed grave concern at the move, then urged Mali to provide a post-coup transition roadmap, saying the move was needed to steer the country back to democratic rule. The situation is similar in neighbouring Burkina Faso and Niger, which also underwent military coups in 2022 and 2023 respectively. Sadiq Abba adds that he thinks the election in Senegal can only inspire neighbouring populations to believe in the democratic process again.
Senegal is good news, especially for the sub-region. It proves that we can achieve change through the ballot box. This means that we can prevent those in power from holding it without necessarily calling the army. The Constitutional Council played its role. It prevented the Senegalese president, Macky Sall, from extending his power. And it prevented a postponement of elections. And it even set the date of the elections before Macky did it. So it's a good message for the entire West African region and even the Sahel, where people have started to lose faith in democracy, thinking that the military is needed to prevent the excesses of certain civil powers.
I finally ask Sadiq what we can expect from the juntas for the rest of the year and what would be done to encourage democracy.
Ce que les militaires ont réussi, c'est justement de ne avoir aucune pression extérieure.
What the military has succeeded in is precisely to have no external pressure. They say they are no longer members of ECOWAS, so ECOWAS cannot hold them accountable. March the 26th was supposed to be the end of the transition in Mali. The military did not respect the schedule, but did not propose a new schedule. The people in power don't really have any legal legitimacy. And in Niger too, it's the same thing. The military succeeded in keeping France, the United States, and the European Union away. As a result, no one on the outside says anything to the military, and that's worrying. It is therefore now necessary that, in addition to internal mobilization to bring back democracy, to also have external pressure. Most donors have started to return. The soldiers tell themselves that, well, if we maintain our position, our posture, everyone will eventually rally round. We can stay in power as long as we want. Well, that's not very good news for democracy.
Ça, c'est pas une bonne nouvelle pour la démocratie.
This month, the International Organization for Migration, IOM, released its Africa Migration Report. The report highlights that migration primarily occurs within the African continent rather than beyond its borders. This is due to a combination of issues, including insecurity, violence and conflict, as well as extreme poverty. I spoke to Yvonne Degue, the spokesperson for IOM for East Africa.
Conflict and violence remain the main drivers of displacement and movements in sub-Saharan Africa, exacerbated by increasing climate change shocks and disasters and hazards. The report also finds that migration primarily occurs within the African continent rather than beyond its borders. So widespread public perception is that Africans who are migrating are trying to leave the continent. We see a lot of media coverage on Africans trying to reach Europe in particular, but the findings of the Africa Migration Report seem to counter this belief. Most people wanting to migrate are actually migrating within the continent. The report also found that refugees and asylum seekers represent a very high proportion of all international migrants in Africa. And that will obviously take us back to what I mentioned earlier about conflict and violence still being one of the main drivers of movements within the continent. The fact that most of those on the move have found themselves in refugee situations due to various crises that we see on the continent. Sudan is just one example. Obviously, multiple countries affected by the crisis there and people fleeing from Sudan into neighboring countries.
Yvonne Degue adds that most of the migrations push African people very close to their original homes. She also shares with us some recommendation to support the refugees.
The largest corridors of inter-African migration or migration between or among African countries were predominantly between countries that share a land border, which highlights how migration on the continent is characterized by short distances. People want to remain close to home. Migrants originating in West and Central Africa, as well as large parts of Southern and East Africa, were mainly living in neighboring or proximate African countries. Now, on the issue of what can be done to create regular pathways for migrants from Africa to move within Africa and beyond the continent, IOM, the International Organization for Migration, is advocating for and advocates for more safe and more regular pathways for migrants wishing to move within the continent and beyond.
This was Yvonne Degue from the International Organization of Migration in Nairobi. And finally, to end this episode on a brighter note, West Africa is to be represented more vividly than ever on one stage, Canterbury Arts. From April the 20th, the Italian city of Venice indeed hosts one of the most prestigious events in the world of visual arts, known as the Venice Biennale. This year, Nigeria will feature the largest number of artists ever, with both Senegal and Benin having their own pavilion for the first time. My colleague, Olya Houghton, spoke to Azun Wanbogu, the curator of the Republic of Benin Pavilion, who is himself Nigerian. The project is titled Everything Precious is Fragile. He explained where the concept came from.
The idea behind Everything Precious is Fragile is to embrace, you know, the truth always has that sort of paradoxical quality about it. And, you know, you can read the title and the theme of the pavilion in both ways. That is, everything precious is fragile, as well as everything fragile is precious, you know. And it, you can reverse the sentence to read both ways and to really reflect on the way we treat the things that are most important. You know, I think with the way the world is going today, there is such an incredible, urgent need to win, you know, to succeed or whatever it is that people call success. But we really want to go back to the truths that the things that shape us as humans, and leaning into that fragility, that vulnerability, that thing that makes us what some people call the, you know, your feminine side, if you like. That's really what we wanted to tap into. Leaning into that to sort of arch back to go forward.
Azu Nwagbogu says during his research to prepare the pavilion, he spent time travelling around Benin, meeting with the custodians of traditional culture. He borrowed the title of the exhibition from the practice of Gelede, the ceremonial dancers using masks which pay tribute to the nurturing mother figure. Gelede literally means everything precious is fragile.
I think, you know, the thematic approach allows us to tackle a lot of the most urgent issues of the world today, like, you know, ecology, economy, loss of biodiversity, and all of these things that are memory, restitution, these things that are super fragile, that are fading away from us because we're all pursuing this sort of relentless idea around, you know, billionaire culture, everyone needs to be super loaded. You know, not really caring for the future and caring for the environment and caring for each other. So that's really what we wanted to stay with, you know, and that's how we came about the theme, and that's how I really settled on, you know, the idea of playing with the paradox of knowledge and epistemes, you know, to present a new idea for Benin's inaugural participation at Venice Biennale.
This was Azu Ndwambogu, the curator of the Republic of Benin Pavilion for the Venice Biennale, interviewed by Olya Houghton. This was a new episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast produced by RFI English. Thanks for listening. And a big thank you to Erwan Rome, who recorded and edited this edition of the podcast, and to Olya Houghton for her contribution. We'll be back next month with a focus on another election in another part of the continent, South Africa. In the meantime, for more African and French news, go to our website rfi.fr/en.